Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Our Wednesday guests are back with us today to discuss their views on mass incarceration, the death penalty, sentencing of death by lethal injection, and life without parole, and the need for changes in the courts and the penal systems in the United States. The most less costly and transparent solution to prison reform would be to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities with actual professional and experienced psychiatrists, psychologists, mental health counselors, substance abuse counselors, medical doctors, nurses, occupation and physical therapists, and educational and vocational components to be included. Solitary confinement and restrictive housing units, abuses, deprivations, and other inhumane treatment, which is what mostly occurs in prisons across this country, is not and will never be the answer. Changes are long overdue, and we will discuss why and how these resolutions can be fulfilled. We need to do something about what's going on in this country, because this country is known throughout the world as being the most harsh, ignorant, vengeful, hateful, racist country in the world. We have had Marion Jacobs come on the show and talk about the differences between the prisons in the United States and the prisons in the Netherlands. We have had politicians from certain states go to Norway to talk to them to find out more about why they are so successful. We have had Franz Kurz from Germany on with us to talk about the prisons and the comparison between the prisons in the United States and Germany. What is wrong with the United States of America? This country can act as though they are the biggest and the most powerful country in the world, and yet they treat their own citizens worse than any other country. We have a government in this country that needs to make some changes, and they need to make them soon. We have had too many suicides in the prisons. We have had too many alleged suicides in the prisons. We have had too many COs and officials getting away with so much because they know they can do it. There has to be oversight in these prisons across the country. And for you out there that have loved ones inside, you need to get more involved instead of just liking things on Facebook, complaining about the system. You need to do something about it. And voting rights for prisoners should never have been taken away. Prisoners of the United States of America, citizens, should be able to maintain their voting rights because they are citizens of this country. And if this country doesn't feel they're citizens once they commit a crime, then all of us who have loved ones inside, are not citizens of this country. So let us go elsewhere, and let us have our loved ones to leave and go elsewhere. This country is not the bright, intelligent, realistic country they think they are. We have people in power that are out there to make money off of prisons, make money off of these prisoners, prisons for profit. We have people that are so greedy that that's all that matters in their lives is their money. We didn't come into this world with money, and we sure in hell are not going to leave this world with money. And you can leave it to your children. But then again, how many children have destroyed, gotten rid of the funds, spent it uselessly? So let's welcome our guest on the show today to talk about the injustices in America, the comparison between the prisons in America and the prisons in other countries that are successful. We should be ashamed of ourselves. Our government should be ashamed of themselves. They talk a big talk, but they don't walk it. If it's their own loved ones, they find a way to get them out of the mess they're in. But when it comes to the sons and daughters of others, it's a different story. So I'd like to start with Marion Jacobs from the Netherlands. Marion, are you on with us?
Yes, Leona. Hi, I am on.
How are you this morning?
Well, for me, it's the afternoon, and I have been working this morning very hard for my book in the sun because it's very warm today. So I am well. Thank you for asking.
I wish I could say the same. It's very cool out this way this morning, and it's cloudy. But we want to hear more, too, about the book you're working on. And we have on with us, is it Sandy? Madeline?
Good morning. This is Sandy. I have my mute on again.
Oh, how are you, Sandy?
I'm doing great. It is rather chilly here this morning, though, very windy. But like Miriam, I've been working on my book as well.
Okay, we will hear more about the books. And right now, I'd like to talk more about what's going on. And one of the things that I'm really finding difficult, and I don't mean to bring up the George Floyd case, but watching the court TV yesterday, I find there were so many people affected by it. I mean, they couldn't hold back the tears. And the judge is going off on some young lady who is she works with the fire department in helping people in crisis, and she couldn't even hold back the tears. EMT, I'm sorry, it's in the EMT, but it was heartbreaking because I'm saying, if that had been anyone else, they'd be in prison serving life. There wouldn't be a trial. But the way that happened, it was so difficult. And one of the things that people forget is because people are wearing uniforms or have titles as law enforcement or COs or prison officials, whatever it might be, they're still human beings. And they're subject to criminal activities as well. And we have to look at these things when judging individuals who are incarcerated. We can't stereotype because every situation is different. But if someone commits a fatal crime and the world is watching as that crime is being committed, it's an automatic life without or death penalty. This should not be going on in this court. And the judge is actually sounding like he's going in the direction of the criminals. So I just wanted to bring that up because we have people in prison for the same reason. People who have committed less atrocities than that was, and they're serving life and there's many on death row, many even innocent on death row. So I just wanted to bring that out. And I'm going to let you girls go on. Why don't we start this time with Miriam? And Miriam, you want to talk about about the differences between the prisons in the Netherlands and also here, your experience in the prisons and also your experiences with the clients that you have worked with and the damaging effects of solitary confinement. And then we'd like to hear more about the book you're writing.
Yes, Leona, I think a very important difference between the United States prison system and the one in the Netherlands is, of course, the size of the system. Here it's all smaller. What I think is the most important difference is that in the Netherlands it's far more humane. It's a humane system. We have, of course, it's not a perfect system. We also have our own problems to solve. We want to try to get to more small-scale detention. That's what we call it. But I cannot imagine in our prisons that there would be torture or that someone would be beat to death or something. That's not possible here because if a CO or would do that, he would be convicted and get a sentence himself. What I see in the United States is a very strange pattern, and that's a kind of, I call it a role reversal, on the street, when an offender commits a crime, then he gets a sentence, and in the system he becomes the victim of, for instance, a CO who commits the same crime as the offender does on the street, but because he is wearing a uniform, he's wearing a kind of power which allows him to do it without any consequences. There are almost no consequences, and that's, of course, crazy in a sense. I think a lot should change inside the education of COs. I think that's where it starts. That COs learn by education that people in prison are human beings who have committed a crime. That's something that should not be denied, but their punishment is only the time they spend in the prison. That's what we have in the Netherlands. The time you do in prison is your punishment. But the way you spend your time in prison is filled with rehabilitation, and not just some programs, but really rehabilitation, where the prisoner learns from self-insight. He gets more insight in who he is, what has happened in his life, what led to his crime, and how can he do it differently now. And that's what I miss in the United States. The United States is only focused on more punishment and revenge, and that does not work. What I do in my book, I will keep that short, is that I am formulating answers to questions that I think a lot of people have, and I have them myself. Questions like, how is it possible that we in the United States have this system? How is it possible that torture is legal? How is it, for instance, possible that there is a large, huge of solitary confinement? People are in solitary confinement sometimes for months or even years, while we know that already in the 50s, it was scientifically proven to be a form of torture. So I think it's very important that we get to an answer to how is it possible that we still use these forms of torture to punish people. And that's what I am answering on a neutral way. For me, that's very important. So it's not a book of emotions or whatever, but really it's about facts. This is what is going on, and that's the reason why you do not get rehabilitated people, but broken people. I think it's very important to get insight in that. So, you know, like, the inmate needs insight in himself and in his crime. We as a society need answers to, we need insight in how does it function? Why does it exist? How is it possible that it can exist legally within law? Because it's very contradictionary. It's clashing, you know, the law and what is happening is very clashing. And my book will give an answer to that. And I will write, my research is on academical level, but I will write my book, my language will be accessible for everybody, because I think everybody has to write to get to more insight in this. And after we have insight in how it works, then we can change it. First, we have to know, you know, if we first have to understand how the prison wall is built before we can break it down. And that's, in fact, why I write this book.
You know, you've been working on this book for a long time, and you haven't talked about it. So it's very interesting to hear what it's going to be about, because these things are so important. Solitary confinement still goes on, as you say, and it was already proven factual that solitary confinement is a form of torture. You know, they use these forms in when they go out to war, this country, when they go to war, a lot of these things that they do, that they are doing to the incarcerated individuals in this country is exactly what they do to others in other countries. And what they're doing in this country when the overseers and the law enforcement, when they do the very same thing, when they themselves do it, they get away with it. And it doesn't make sense. It has to stop somewhere.
Yeah, and that the fact that it doesn't make sense, that's what I try to answer in my book. Like, if I give an example, if you look at the food industry, then there are corporations who make a lot of money by long contracts they have with the prison systems, and by delivering as cheap and as less food as possible, they make a lot of money. But that's not the whole answer. I also answer how corporation functions. Because if you only look at the first part, that the way they make money, then I have this question, how is this legally possible? Well, it is legally possible. And the way it is legally possible, the way things are linked to each other, that is what I describe in my book. So the facts that I describe are not new. We all know about solitary confinement. We all know about the food industry. We all know about the million-dollar industry and all that. So the facts that I describe are not new, but the way I link them to each other, the picture, the whole puzzle, I think that's new, and that's the answer to all these strange questions, you know, what you say, all these things that simply does not make sense and are strange that it's possible that it happens. It will make sense. And I think if you read the puzzle, then we can change the picture on the puzzle.
That is interesting, very interesting. And, you know, you've talked about this a lot, about the crimes, not looking at the crime or the offender, but to look at the causes behind the crime. And
yes.
I hope that will also be included in the book, because I find that intriguing. Very interesting too.
Yes, one chapter will be about deeper justice, because that's of course what deeper justice stands for, is looking at the human being behind the crime, and the crime, seeing the crime as a part of somebody. You know, I think there are in society, there might be people when they hear you or me or Sandy or other people, they might think, well, that we are only looking at incarcerated people as victims of the system. But I think it's important for society that prisoners are, of course, also offenders. They have committed a crime. We do not forget it. They have crossed lines, which they should not have done. But that's not the whole answer. So we do not forget the crime. The crime is a part of the offender. And when I look at my own work with incarcerated people, then we research the crime. What, like I asked, I can ask a question, who were you at the moment that you could cross that line? Well, if you do that, then you see that at the moment that somebody commits a crime, he does not feel responsibility. So it's very important to ask the question, why did you not feel responsibility? How does responsibility play a role in your personal life? And then he has to learn to develop his feeling of responsibility to himself and to society. But what you see in the current prison system is that personal responsibility is even taken away. And that's a form of dehumanization. So an imprisoned man or woman does not get a chance to develop responsibility. He gets not a chance to develop empathy. Those are very important things to function in society. So before he committed the crime, a lot was wrong, which was the reason that he could not develop it. It might be his youth, it might be a disorder, it might be trauma, it can be everything. Then he commits a crime because he's able to do that because of his personal issues. But then he gets into, or he ends into the system, and instead of developing those human parts, he even is more damaged in that. And after that, he gets released and he still doesn't know what it means to be responsible, to feel empathy, etc. And it goes wrong. And that's the circle.
I have a question. As a psychosocial therapist, have you ever heard from your client, incarcerated client, when they committed their crime, that it was as though they were outside their body looking in and they had no control because they weren't the actual being at the time? I've heard prisoners actually say that they were looking at themselves from the outside in, and they had no control over what was going on.
Yeah, they sometimes they have committed a crime out of trauma, but they were not aware at that moment. That's why the deeper justice is a process of awareness. Yes, I have heard that too. They were another person at the moment they committed the crime, and I've helped a lot of incarcerated people, and not, you know, every story is different. I cannot compare two inmates to each other, two stories to each other, two crimes to each other. So it's so personal. But what you see in the prison system is, you know, you have a diversity of people, 2.2 million people. That's one big diversity of all kinds of unique persons, and they are all transformed to one label. And that's so breaking, because how can you heal if you are no longer, if you don't, you know, if you stop existing in the prison system? The human being stops existing as a human being. There is always, you know, the moment that somebody commits crime, it's also a diversity of reasons why. But it's all, there is, if I go deeper into the crime with the inmate, then there is always, there are reasons, there are logical reasons why he came to that moment. You know, if you look at a newborn baby, every baby is the same. We all get in this world on the same way. And after that, we all have our own individual path we are walking in life, and things are going well and other things are going wrong. And so we have to deconstruct, in fact, or analyze that path. What is happening? I always call it picking up stones. What I do with inmates is I walk with them on their path. They lead me. I'm not a leader. I'm the follower. Because he has his own insight, and he picks up the stones where he has been stumbling about in his life, and we together we look at the stones, we investigate stones, and then he will recognize them for the future. That's the way of healing. That's the way of deeper justice.
I find it very interesting. There's so many, like you say, there's so many different situations. I wanted to say something real quick about solitary confinement. What I'm finding now is because solitary confinement is being talked about more, I'm finding that the Department of Corrections now has, well, they have had the restrictive housing units, but what they're doing is actually putting a lot of people in restrictive housing units to justify they're not putting them in solitary, but they're doing the same thing. On these restrictive housing units, these prisoners are being deprived, you know, they're being of anything, and they're also having their belongings, many of them having their belongings taken. So I'm finding they're starting to use restrictive housing as their means for solitary confinement, and I just wanted to bring that out. But as you mentioned with these prisoners, you know, they weren't born bad, and something somewhere along the line happened. We also have to look at, they say, we have to look at the victims as well. The problem is sometimes, unfortunately, sometimes some victims bring it on by their, and it backfires. Like I go back to that Miss, I think her name was Cutter, that talked her boyfriend into committing suicide. Unfortunately, he committed suicide, and she was the bad guy. But if he had turned, if that serious depression turned into homicide, he would have been the bad guy. And we need to look at some of these issues too. We need to be very sensitive to the victims, because victims, there's a lot of people who have been victimized unnecessarily and traumatically, and we have to look at those.
What I would like to first respond to what you say about solitary confinement and these restrictive blocks. I think that solitary confinement is often used as a very easy solution to anger or aggression between inmates. And because it's very easy to say, oh, somebody has a very difficult character or he has issues, well, let's put him in solitary confinement because then we have no more problems. So solitary confinement is only used for the ease of the COs, and it's not used as a tool for the inmate, because it's only devastating to the inmate. If the COs would have had another training, so besides, I understand that they, as also here, I understand that a correctional officer needs to know about how to handle aggression, how to maintain order. But besides that, if he would have been educated in how to treat the inmate in a humane way on a personal level, then he would not need solitary confinement, because he would solve aggression by interacting with the imprisoned man or woman. So solitary confinement is only a solution for the COs and not for the inmates. I also would like to respond to what you say about the victims. In the first of all, the process of the victim is an other process of the process of an offender. A victim he or she is going first to a process in where is anger, sadness, all these emotions. But somewhere, because I also have worked with victims for a few years, but somewhere a victim comes to the point that he or she has to make a choice between, am I going to stay full of revenge and anger for the rest of my life, which means, am I too afraid to get to my fear and get to my real sadness, or am I going to go into my own healing process, which means that I go to my inner sadness and process that. If a victim chooses to stay, and I think that's a pitfall, if a victim chooses to stay in revenge and anger, then two things happen. Then, first of all, he can never come to forgiveness or understanding or whatever. And second is, he also loses his own life, because a life only filled with revenge is not living a life. But that's the choice that a victim has to make, because the crime cannot be undone anymore. The crime has been committed, and there has to be a moment that a victim has to say, okay, this has been done to me. I didn't choose for this. This is something, a painful thing has been done to me. How am I going further in my life now? Which choice am I going to make? And the offender has a different process. The offender also has to deal with the crime he has committed. But then we get to the process of deeper justice. So, you know, what I said, getting to insight about how does responsibility play a role, because if an offender does not develop responsibility, he also cannot feel guilt. and he needs to feel responsibility and guilt in order to process it and close it down and move on, because somewhere you have to move on otherwise. And that's what happened, what's so devastating in the current prison system. People stay stuck in the crime. And how bad the crime is, you know, no matter how bad the crime is, somewhere there is a point that you do have to go on. Look at people who have been doing things in wars, you know. Somewhere there is a point, of course, it will always stay with them. But somewhere there is a point that you also have to move on in your life. That's a natural law. It's inherent to life. And what you see in the prison system is, it's like a film. The film of life is staying stuck. It stands still. And the only picture that you see is the crime. That's it. But that's unnatural. And that's unnatural for both victim and offender. And that's why restorative justice, if a victim chooses to heal in himself, and if an offender goes to his process of deeper justice, afterwards they come to a point that they might come to restorative justice, which means that the offender is able to feel responsibility and guilt, and the victim is able to come to forgiveness.
Come to terms.
That could be a forgiveness. That could be an outcome. And it's a long process, but it's a healing process. And the prison system prevents this crucial process.
You know, it's just amazing how these things are happening. And we have our political leaders that are just allowing it to go on when they know the damaging effects that these people, it's having on these people. I can't believe, again, I can't believe, and I'll tell you, the media, you talk about the victims not being able to, you know, to be able to find comfort or to be able to get over it, and yet we have a media that will push it to keep these people from healing on both sides. The media will continuously talk about it. You know, again, when I was young growing up and I listened to the news, the media did not, they stayed neutral. They reported the news and they stayed neutral. We have a media outlet now throughout the country that are always in the middle of everything. And they're reporting things before they even get the facts, which doesn't help. So I look at the media being partially responsible for the lack of healing for these victims. And I also look at the political arena. If you or Sandy and others who have this professional, look at the way you interact with others. This is what we need, as you say, in the prisons. If this is what they're doing in Norway, in the Netherlands, in Germany, and other countries, why can't they do this in the United States? I remember telling a guard one time that as a social worker, we tried to understand these people. We tried to figure out what happened. You know, something might have happened in their lives. And he turned around and he said, we're not social workers. Granted, you're not social workers, but you have a team that you contract with who do have social workers involved, who do have psychiatrists and psychologists. If they can't do it, then they shouldn't even be contracted with the DOC. I'm strongly one to believe that they should allow independent providers to go in and work with these prisoners. People like yourselves with psychosocial therapy background and experience.
But I think it could even happen on a much easier way. If you learn CEOs, a CEO does not need to become a counselor or a coach. And CEO has another purpose than a counselor and a coach. But if you only in your education teach student CEOs a humane approach, that can be done with even very small things like greeting a prisoner, asking a prisoner, how are you today? If you do these, you know, these little questions we do with our neighbors, you know, you go on on the street, you see your neighbor, you say, hey, hello, how are you today? Or it's nice weather. These simple, small things are signs of humanity. That's what human beings, the way human beings approach each other. If a CEO only learns these little things, which is connected to another view on a prisoner, seeing prisoners as human beings, because that's what they are, that, you know, that would be so easy to implement. And I think that could be implemented in current trainings. It doesn't cost any money to ask a prisoner, how are you today? What's happening today with you? Is there something that I could do? You know, all these simple questions.
That's very admirable. That's an admirable approach, but here's what the problem is. In the United States in particular, when the prison system became an integral part of how society would be maintained, people were given specific roles. And those roles were either some level of authority, or they were the layperson, the person who went to school, or the person who taught, on and on. And as Americans, we embraced those identities, and so much so that we don't know anything else but those identities. And that's part of the problem right now. We've got prison officials who initially started out to be just prison officials, and now we're asking them to be counselors, and now we're asking them to have a heart. Well, when they originally came into the prison system as employees, they had a job to do, and that was to maintain order. Now, when they started teaching these officials, in order to maintain order, you are not to engage. You are not to smile. Mm-hmm. You are not to be pleasant. You are not to give a damn. Your job is specifically to make sure that these people go from point A to point B to point C, and that they are back to point A, which is the cell, by the end of the day.
But the thing is, I trained with the Department of Corrections back in 2006 as a mental health management. And I'll tell you right now, they teach you from the beginning not to trust, which is good, but they teach you from the beginning things that they have you so worried when you go in that you already have a hatred for people that you don't even know. I'm one to find out.
Well, think about Alcatraz. Think about the number of inmates. Okay, and when you talk about prisoners and or inmates, only God knows how many people in Alcatraz were actually innocent. Okay, but when you look at Alcatraz when it was opened years ago, and the guards and their families lived on that rock. The housing was on the rock, okay? There was no way in the world that you were going to get the guard to let down his guard enough, knowing that most of the people in that prison were murderers or were about to be murdered.
When you look at these other countries...
Yeah, I think that's a big problem, because what you see in Norway, that's, I think, the difference with Norway, and we are trying here to work on it. What you describe is this vertical hierarchy
mm-hmm.
of the organization,
yes.
and that's purely power based. I've seen. I needed to do that research for my book. I've seen if I look at a student CEO and I go all the way up to the warden in one prison, then I have 9 levels from student CEO to warden. There are already 9 levels of power between those
mm-hmm.
two. And that's I think that's a big problem.
Oh, that's a major problem.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I guarantee you, no matter how well-intentioned that mental health worker or that guard or the cook or the doctor, no matter how much their heart and passion goes into that prison, okay, chances are pretty good within, 3 to 5 years, they are going to look very much like the other guards who have been working there for 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's
and,
hard
and
to,
Yeah, and what you see in Norway is a horizontal hierarchy. So then the groups, the different groups, professionals, they enforce each other. They use their own qualities, but there is no hierarchy of power. It's more cooperation. Mm-hmm. There is this cooperation of this different professionals, you know, and then you get a complete different picture.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
when I think about solitary confinement, you know, of course, also, I mean, I'm backtracking just a minute, but, you know, it's also called, known as the SHU, or there are so many different terms for solitary confinement. But along with what you were saying earlier, Miriam, where these people are often put in there, as a form of control. I was speaking with someone yesterday that spent 2 months in there because he did not want to get his hair cut. And, you know, anything over 15 days, the United Nations has said, as you were saying earlier, is a form of punishment. So, you know, that's a major problem. The other thing I find really interesting is that the amount of people serving life sentences right now in the United States is more than the entire prison system held in 1970.
I'd like to take that comment and expand on that a little bit, if you don't mind. When you were talking about the remark about solitary confinement, let's keep in mind that a lot of the actions that guards engage in and do is not just to punish that specific offender, but is also to model and mirror to all the other people within that environment. And I'm trying to remember what the movie is. It was one of my favorite films with Struther Martin and Failure. Do you remember the movie with Paul Newman?
No, that's another problem I have with movies. They take the blood sweat of individuals who have bled, who have died. They take it and they make movies. I don't go with movies. I go with facts.
Well, that's cool. That's fine, That's fine, but this movie has always been relevant in that there was one particular scene where Paul Newman was the one inmate. He was in jail for a crime that was not considered a major deal, big deal, but because of who he was and how he acted, they made it doubly difficult for him. And at one point, Paul Newman says, I'm not going to do this, or I got caught. And Struther Martin turns around and says, it seems to me what we have here is a failure to communicate.
And that's what try to have one voice at a time. And let's try to leave the movies out of a factual thing where people are dying in prison. We'll have a separate show.
What I would like to say is that somebody, I don't know who of you said it, but somebody said solitary confinement is also used as an example for the other inmates. If you do this, then you get in the SHU. Well, it's also written by law. It's one of the laws of incarceration.
Yes, and that's the only point I was really trying to make.
I think that's what we really have to realize, that everything is what is done in prison is legal.
Exactly.
Really, you can legally torture somebody. I'm almost speaking in Dutch again. Sorry. it's crazy, but we have to be aware of the fact that you can legally torture in somebody. Somebody is, iemand is a Dutch word for somebody. And I don't know how many people are aware of that. And I think that Those things are important because then the law gets involved. These are not accidents. This is a rule.
Exactly. And that was my only point, is that with those, with that particular image,
yeah,
you're not only setting the stage for the offender, but you're also telling anyone who's in that environment that it's okay. Okay, it's, and
yeah,
you,
and
you see that, and I am going to say films again because I think they are relevant.
Depends on what film.
That out of the prison, and all of a sudden you've got an audience of people watching that same film, and they're saying, you know what? They had every right to put him in that hole. They had every right to institute solitary confinement. Okay, they don't really know the full situation. They only know that this guard is doing something that he legally has a right to do that's inhumane.
Yeah.
And so I totally agree with
it. And then I would like to ask you, what is behind that? How is it possible to legally dehumanize people? Who has an answer
to that? I personally think that it's who we... I personally think that it is, we're talking about the prison system and we're talking about incarceration, but the United States right now is going through something that what we're talking about is an extension of.
Yes.
We a lot of our court systems and our judicial systems, have all been indoctrinated into this system that says it's okay for our government officials to do what they're doing.
Yeah, and what does it say, because that's also what I try to describe in my research, because this prison system, like all the systems, reflects society. It's a mirror of society.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have to question,
mm-hmm,
what does it say about society, about the culture between people, not the culture of the past, but the culture between people, because we all have different habits, a different culture. So
what I have found through my research, Miriam, too, is that we cannot really grasp our prison systems and our justice system without looking at history.
Yes,
there are
absolutely
so many, many parallels between slavery and our prison systems. And
yeah,
something
but
else
no,
I'd
but,
like
but,
to say, I remember all the... I remember, you know, that much of this was before the civil rights ever happened. But, you know, for one reason or another, people felt like they had the right to determine, because I am a European American and I am white, that I am therefore automatically more brilliant, more intelligent, and there are
privileged,
you know, more privileged, and you as a black person who wasn't a citizen yet were bought enslaved. Of course, we all know, just like cattle. I mean, it was a horrendous
but that's already how the country started, with the Native Americans. That's before slavery. What did all these colonists do with the Native Americans?
It's it's true. That's true.
That's,
and you know what?
But
I
now,
have to
but now,
with you.
But you know, the danger is that we also can say, okay, this is history, and this is the way the country started. Okay, we have the system. Okay, that's it. No, now we live in 2021. We have another conscious. We have learned a lot. What is happening now in current society in this year, which makes the system maintain? So I do look at history, at the start, etc., but I also want to look at what is happening in current society. Otherwise, we can use the past also as a reason to maintain it. That's a danger. You feel what
I
mean?
I'm so glad you're saying that.
We are now. We are responsible for what we do. The now. We are not the colonists of the Indians anymore. We are now. So what is the answer now in 2021? What can
we
do?
The answer to me is that people have not taught their children any better people still feel superior. And I'm not saying that's only white people that feel superior, because there are people of every race and ethnicity. There are individuals everywhere that feel superior.
Exactly.
Then I have another question. Why in the United States, and of course it's everywhere in the world, but in the United States in this moment it's very visible. What mm-hmm. is this need for people to feel superior, whether you're white or black or I don't care what color? What is it? In and out.
Insecurity. You know what? I want to say something on that.
Why are we insecure?
These people that are out for power and greed, they are very insecure, because if they weren't insecure, they would be their own people. But they want to fit in with their peers, because they feel that their peers are it's almost like they're in. And I have to tell you, one time I worked for this rich couple. They had a beautiful home on Cape Cod, but the house next to them or in front of them burned down. The people ended up building a house that was, and this is in a very exclusive area, very wealthy. The people in front of them, and these people I worked for were very wealthy. The people in front of them built a house that was so, so big that the people I worked for, you couldn't even overlook the beach or anything, because this house was in, it's almost like they feel they have to outdo the other or fit in with the other. And by fitting in, they have to think the same way. They have to follow suit with what they're doing. It's like these kids that bully little ones in school. They want to fit in with the ones that aren't being bullied, so they go along with the bullying. This is what we have in this country. We have a lot of bullying.
We are talking about the United States, but I think you also have to remember that, and I think this is what the real issue is, we're talking about the U.S., but we also have to look at this globally. The whole mm-hmm. idea of privileged people and non-privileged people and race and gender and all of that, that has been going on since time immemorial, okay?
And you're
all
right.
You gotta do,
you're yeah, right.
All you got to do is take a look at France.
You're right about that, but we're talking about the prison system. We're not talking about another
but
country.
But what you described, Leona, was very interesting, because what you described reflects what's happening in the prison system.
Exactly.
You know, this bullying is a reflection of locking up people who committed a crime and bullying them there. And what you see globally is the rise of extreme rights that's everywhere in the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
Look at more of the dictators are rising, and even we had our elections a few weeks ago in the Netherlands, and the right parties have won again. So it is in the rise. It's a problem.
I'm probably the wrong person to talk about this, because I recognize that we're talking about the prison system, but for me it's hard to take a look at the prison system and not recognize how much of what we see is actually a microcosm of what's happening everywhere. You know, I mean, we're the ones that are supposed to be trying to keep the prison system civil, but until we can, I just personally feel that until we can recognize what part we play in allowing that prison system to continue doing what it's doing, until we recognize that, we're just going to be, this conversation will also be going on forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, I think it takes the guts, I think, for society to look in the mirror of the prison system.
Yes.
It takes a lesson. You know, if you that's why changing prison reform or abolishing the prison is very difficult, because changing a system like the prison system is also changing society, because the system has, you know, gives messages to society. You know, if I am able to dehumanize you, then I first have to dehumanize myself.
Absolutely,
you know,
right.
I am a civilized woman, so I am not able to cross that line to dehumanize you, because it hurts me. It would hurt me. So if I can do that, then I have to look back at myself and think, hey, which line of dehumanization of myself am I crossing now? Sometimes I think if you look at the bad CEOs, there are also good CEOs, but if you look at CEOs who do dehumanize people, they first are dehumanizing themselves. And my question is then, are they aware of that? How is it possible that a CEO is able to rape a woman in a woman's prison, but if he is on the streets, he will not think about rape because then it's a crime. But in the prison, he can rape a female inmate, do the same act, and then he can cross the line, but not on the streets. That's very important. That's very important to deconstruct what is happening then in that CEO. Because I have been thinking about what if my husband would be a CEO and he comes home and he has had sex, illegal sex with inmates in prison. How would I feel as being his wife? You know, there are so many issues to that.
Even if he was abusive or overly abusive, if he was someone that was a family man and you saw him Monday through Friday being kind to his children and being kind to other people, only to find out within that 8 or 10 hour period of time that he's in prison, he actually becomes a monster, you know, not because he wants to necessarily, but that because he's been taught that's the way he has to act there. That has got to be very disheartening.
Yeah, and of course, it has to do with the fact that in the system, you have this power, this hierarchy of power, and any human being, it's human nature to want to have power. But there is also a personal choice. We cannot say, oh, a CEO is abusive because he is in the system. Of course, it's a big reason. But I have decided to write also down that is always also a personal choice to get along with it or not. This is the same as what you saw in the concentration camps in World War II. You know, the guards were able to kill, to gas these people. And at night they came home and they sat with the families and the children at the dinner table and said, did you have a nice day? It is possible. Mm-hmm. We as a human beings have this in us. But we do also have a choice on personal level. We cannot only say, oh, yes, it's the system. Because we are the system. We have developed the system. It didn't fall from heaven or hell. We developed it by ourselves. So it's part of human nature that we are capable of doing this. Mm-hmm. And that's what we all have to be aware of in society. Mm-hmm. We have to be aware of this is the devil in us. We can go to church, but we also have to admit that there is also a devil in each of us. And it's not only the prison system, there are more. If you look on YouTube, there is a hidden, it's a film, it's filled with a hidden camera. If you look at Amazon, the distribution center of Amazon work exactly with the same power and the same way as the prison system. But we all buy our books by Amazon. It's so in society, but the difference between Amazon, of course, and the prison system, that in the prison system, people are meant to be disciplined, but they are broken. They are mentally killed, and many times they are physically killed.
Yeah.
So, and it is possible because it's legal by law.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things have to become aware for. And of course, there is a part of society everywhere. Those are also global things. There are always people who want to keep their eyes closed and not look in the mirror. But if we have enough people who become aware and think, hey, but this is the way it works, then we have a start. Then we have a start. And it's a struggle. Of course, it's a struggle. But we do have to go through this struggle for the people who are suffering so much.
Mm-hmm. I have to say 5 minutes, and then I'm going to let you girls take over. Sandy, I haven't even introduced you, and Kia, I want to thank you for coming on again. But one of the things I want to say is in society, Miriam, you said it. First, it started with the Native Indians. Okay, then it started with the people of color, And then it started with the low class, or they would say the low class whites. And then it's now it's coming to the average citizen. And if the,
yes.
if we do something about it soon, it's only going to be the wealthy that are going to be walking the streets, while the middle class all the way down to the poorer class
exactly.
and are going to be incarcerated. Who's going to be running the world but the wealthy, wealthy, wealthiest? So that's why mm-hmm. I say it started off with the Native Indians, then the people of color, then the people, mostly the like the whites from down south, you know, in these poverty-stricken areas. And now we see it happening even with people, the average citizen. So we need
but
to
see,
focus.
Yeah, that's the problem.
It is extending. It is extending.
And it
yes.
is. And another thing we have to look at is that our own people of color, are, as you said, Marion, before, it goes both ways. A lot of these people of color that talk about Black Lives Matter, are they talking about just African Americans? Are they leaving out the other people of color, which I see it happening all the time? We have the extremists.
Well, and
white.
Right now we've got the Asians. Asian Americans are now
yes.
in that.
We have
yeah.
all these different classes that are all separated and trying to fight their own race, fight for their own race, instead of coming together in unity to come together as Asians, as a people of color, as poverty-stricken, as average citizens, to complain about it. And there's more wealthy.
But see, that's how come. But there's a reason that has to be that way. It has to be that way.
Please, I don't like to have.
I'm sorry.
I just want to finish.
I'm sorry. There's a trail. There's an echo. So it sounded like you stopped. I'm sorry.
No, you know the thing with me is at my age, if I don't get it out right away, I forget it. But that's what I'm saying. This is what we have to, keep in
yeah,
mind.
I'm like 65. Trust me, we all are dealing
well,
with that one. No,
baby.
But go ahead and finish.
You're still a baby. I'm 74.
And Leona, we are not going to label. We are not going to label prisoners, and we are not going to label age. Forget labels.
That's right.
You are
we're all going to take our vitamins. We're going to take our vitamins and we're going to drink our tea.
Exactly. And we are going to release the prisoners.
I started off as a prison advocate when I was in my late 40s, so you know how long I've been around. But go ahead. I'm going to let you girls finish up.
Let me just say this real quick, if I can, if it's okay, because I don't know who the woman from Norway is. Who is that?
Yeah, from the Netherlands.
The Netherlands, who is it?
Yeah, that's I. I am from the Netherlands.
Netherlands, I'm sorry. Your words are just so much valuable right now, especially when you were talking about the Holocaust. There was no such place, no such prison equal to what the Holocaust provided in terms of concentration camps. And when you start talking about how everyone has to be responsible for their actions, I was never so educated as when I went to see the concentration camp and we started talking about Auschwitz. See, because America has always been told that it was Hitler's fault. But when you go to the concentration camp and you hear about Auschwitz, you start to realize Hitler was just one person. It was everyone else around it that allowed it to happen.
Exactly. And
that's
I think,
what made it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I think responsibility is a major thing. And that's also what you see reflected in the mirror of prison. You know, in the beginning of the radio show, I talked about responsibility. Somebody who offends somebody who commits a crime is not responsibility at this moment. It reflects the lack of responsibility of society.
Yes.
We are, on a personal level, we are always responsible for the actions that we do, the good ones and the bad ones. And we cannot completely hide behind systems or whatever. We are, but responsibility is a sign of maturity. So if a civilization is not, and that's what you also saw in Germany, World War II, if a civilization does not take responsibility for its actions, it's not mature. Then it has to grow to maturity, because that is thinking things, being responsibility, of taking responsibility of the actions and try to change things. That's maturity. Mm-hmm. So how mm-hmm. mature is a society? That's one of the questions. And the prison system is interesting besides it needs to change for the people inside it, but it's also a lesson to learn. It contains so much lessons. Because now what you see is that what I said, and it's so, I find it interesting too, that inside the system there are all these inmates who are not able to take responsibility for some reason. And then you have the CEOs who also don't take responsibility in order to treat the other with dignity. So you see the same back, so the CEOs and the inmates also reflect each other. And both don't take responsibility, and both don't treat each other with dignity. Dignity is also is also a part of maturity. It's even part of the Eighth Amendment that we always have to treat the other with dignity, also when he is in prison or in court or whatever. It's written in the Eighth Amendment. But the amendments are values, are based on values, and values are very sensitive for all kinds of interpretations and misinterpretations. There are many gaps in democracy, and those gaps are abused, like the sort of strategy which is used, you know, so, yeah.
Well,
and that's part of why the system could develop itself, could be developed.
Wow.
And there are definitely similarities with the concentration camps in World War II.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have been 21 years ago, I have been in Auschwitz, and 1.5 year ago I went into a prison in Florida, and both times I felt that I entered a complete different reality with different codes, different values, everything
mm-hmm.
different, as if I was Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland.
I understand that, yes. Most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just getting back to the prisons for profit, and some of these issues. This is something that needs to be addressed, and we can't express our concerns enough that something has to be done. Something has to be done about it. You know, when it starts happening out in the communities. And it's happening in the prisons. It's almost like we are the government. The people are the government, but yet they're allowing all of these things to take place. And before you know it, we're not going to have any say, because no matter what anyone says, and it's that way now, whatever anyone says, they're not going to be listening to. We're seeing now in other countries what happened in, what was that, starts with an M, Manara or whatever, where the violence was so bad, people were being killed. This is a country that's following what's going on in this country, unfortunately. We're supposed to be the role model for all countries. I say this all the time. We're the United States. We have representatives from this country in this country. So why is this country the most evil of all?
Yeah, and it is the view on the country is changing. The view of the United States being the role model is changing, because on a global way we also see a shift of power. China is becoming far more powerful now, and China says to you, and when the United States is trying to appeal to the human rights in China, say, you know, accusing China of doing bad things with the human rights, now China is saying, well, look at yourself, look at what you do to the black people, look at what you do to the immigrants.
Exactly.
And I think this is needed. I think we are living in a transitional time, a time of a transition of powers, and I think it's very important to see this, and I think it's also needed, and it will become worse first. But we are, I have this feeling, and I cannot prove this, but I have this feeling that we are changing to another paradigm, and it's needed.
Oh, yeah, the shift is in. The shift is taking place, most definitely.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, one of the, I think, and I believe I did make it clear that I am black, okay, please no comments, but as far as the, I hate that, you know what, anyway, here's the thing.
You
are you. Yeah, exactly, and I think one of the biggest errors that politics has brought into the United States is multiculturalism. Okay, Sandy was talking about Black Lives Matter, and now we've got Asian Americans. We've got all these different cultures trying to gain a voice. Well, the reason why nobody's hearing anyone is because we spent so many years trying to separate everybody, making blacks important, making Asians important, on and on. What happened to the so-called melting pot?
Yeah.
You
well,
know,
I start to see the melting pot of cultures more like that's a melting pot where all the old European cultures fit in.
Yeah.
And the minority and the minority groups are in the way of the material American dream. So we have to get rid of all these minorities, and that's why we have 2.2 million people incarcerated. And that's the melting pot of undesirables. I call the prison system a melting pot of undesirables.
Yeah.
They are in the way of the American dream.
Sandy can tell you about that.
Sandy,
nobody. I don't allow anyone to use this term because I'm going to use it in the book. And my loved one helped me find this term, the melting pot of undesirables. Man, it's crazy.
Yeah. I love that. I think that is so appropriate.
Yeah,
I feel like we were more, even when you went to, even when someone went into prison, when they came out, there was usually people of their community or of their area that joined together to support the family of that inmate. But we don't see that anymore. Now, I used to work with an organization where we would provide Christmas presents to the children of inmates.
We have that here.
Okay.
Yeah.
But here was the problem. It got to the point where the families of that inmate didn't even try to have Christmas or Thanksgiving because they knew we were coming.
Oh, you know, what happens is a lot of families, when their loved ones go in, families, you know, they're broken just like the victims, you know, and a lot of times they don't want to celebrate the holidays because it's too painful. You had mentioned Sandy's back on with us, and Sandy, I wanted to introduce you. I hadn't gotten a chance to. Sandy Fries is a cognitive behavioral life coach therapist, and she was getting ready to say something earlier, and I interrupted. So, Sandy, you want to talk a little bit about what you do and the book?
Yeah. The only reason I got off was because tomorrow I am reporting for jury duty. So I just had a lot to do. I wanted to, you know, make that clear. That's why I went ahead and hung up. But I'll be brief about the book. It's called The United States Injustice System. And the beginning of the book, I am describing different laws and things that are in place to protect our incarcerated citizens. Then I go into the death penalty and life without parole, and I'm making a parallel between our country's history and our judicial system of today. Then I've interviewed people who were abused, neglected, or passed around from foster care home, several times, and how that may have led to them going down the wrong path that led to incarceration. And then I've got a lot of interviews to put in there with people who have been incarcerated or still are about the things they are subjected to or have been. as far as either, you know, solitary confinement or mental abuse, not receiving medications, being fed food that's not fit for human consumption. And then I'm having a chapter that I want to dedicate to our lost brother and sister citizens that, you know, they lost their lives while incarcerated. So, yeah, it's kind of going to go along with Miriam's book, different ways, but still the same purpose.
Sandy, what is the name of the book again? It really fits into what we're talking about.
The United States Injustice System.
Yeah, that's exactly a title for it. We have. Oh, and also let them know, let the audience know how they can get in contact with you. And then, Marian, I want you to do the same thing.
Okay. My email is Sandy Freese, that's F as in Frank, R-E-E, S as in Sam, E, 63@gmail.com. My Facebook groups are Factually Innocent and Injustice Reform. And my business is Victory from Chaos. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and I have a website. It's just victoryfromchaos.com.
Okay, and you can just type her name in the internet browser and find Sandy Freese as well. And Sandy, I want to thank you for that. That book is going to be interesting, and I need to look forward to it.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to Miriam's too.
These are the exact types of books we need to be reading, and hopefully the audience will be getting something of it too. Miriam, do you want to give your information as well?
Yes, my email is Miriam Jacobs, M-I-R-I-A-M Jacobs, gmail.com. No, wait, miriamjacobs67@gmail.com. Sorry. I have a website, www.deeperjustice.com. I am on Facebook. I also have a page there called Deeper Justice, and I am also on LinkedIn.
Okay, I wanted to say I ordered a book, Prison Education Guide, from a Christopher Zocas. Christopher Zocas was in prison for years, and he ended up, throughout the years, he ended up writing and authoring and having it published, Prison Education Guide, and it has all kinds of resources in it. And I wish that I could have sent it to someone else because I'm not much of a reader, but the book itself I can go to and I can find resources to share with others too. So this is something that you might want to just go on the site and look at. Prison Education Guide. He spent many years in prison, and I believe it was a federal prison, but it was a very interesting resource directory. I wanted to go on with that. And Kia, tell us a little bit about yourself while you're on with us.
It's Maya, actually.
I'm calling you Kaya.
No, I was here last week, and I think I had mentioned before that I was at a point where I was trying to put together a project to address my time in jail, which was only a week. But in that week's period of time, I learned more about the prison system than I had ever thought I'd known. And ever since that, being sentenced and probation in a year's period of time, I've just been collecting information in order to make other people aware of what's going on and how it affects us not just as individuals but collectively as a community, and how society mirrors basically what everyone has been saying here, how what we watch, what we say, what we see, what we don't see, all of that impacts how people are treated once they are arrested and incarcerated.
Right. You know, you can be so well respected on the outside when you're doing really, really good on the outside. Everyone loves you. Everyone respects you. And as soon as you go to prison, no one looks at, as Miriam always talks about, the cause. No one looks at the cause. They just look at the bars. you're behind bars, so all of a sudden you're an animal. You know, you're no good. Families, friends,
the Scarlet A.
May I say something? May I ask something? You are, the name was Maya, from Maya Angelou, from the same name as Maya Angelou.
My name is my mother named me. It's a Finnish. M-A-I-A.
Yeah, I would like to have contact with you by Zoom if you like that. If you are interested to talk a little bit further about this, Maya.
Absolutely. I am a history buff that I see all the things that all you ladies are seeing.
Yeah. Do you have an email address, or can I give you my email?
I have Miriam Jacobs. I am so sorry. Please know that I'm not purposely stepping on anyone. It's just that there's an echo. And so I hear like a 5 seconds of silence, and I think people stop talking. So please, I do apologize for that.
I'm wondering. Somebody has a speaker on.
That's okay. Do you have my email address?
Yes, miriamjacobs67@gmail.com.
Yeah, if you email, could you email me that we can make we can arrange a Zoom meeting?
Absolutely, I'd love that.
Yeah, me too. Great, thank you. Okay, Leona, you go on.
Okay. I believe Sandy was saying something.
No, I'm good.
Sandy's not.
I will run. No. I'm going to run, though, because I've got some things to do. So, girls, think about me tomorrow when I go to court and wish you luck.
Yeah, we pray for you. We pray for you. Thank you.
And we know Sandy is going to be one of these jurors who are going to be making sure that the wrong decisions don't get made. And this is another issue that this happens so many times in with these incarcerated people, is that they were unjustly sentenced because of people that wanted to go home or go do their thing, and they didn't have time or didn't want to take the time to really, really look at the cases. This is a major issue.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't mind holding out if I don't think it's right.
Exactly.
That's good.
We'll be thinking
indeed,
about you.
Thank you. You guys all have a great day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, we love you.
Okay, good luck. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Yeah. So we have about 7.5 minutes, so we'll talk about what we need to talk about to get the word out. And one of the things is we were talking earlier, and I want to bring this up again, is when we complain about the people that are oppressing us, our enemies, as some might say, or those that feel that they have to be our enemies, we also have to look at those who are complaining about the oppression, because we have people, white, black, Asian, whatever the case may be, who distinguish themselves or put themselves above even their own races sometimes. And this is where we have these people in high positions looking down at the ones that are in a lower position. We have that in all races. There's a lot of, and I'm sure, Mia, you can confirm this, there's a lot of blacks that will be in higher positions who look down upon those who are not.
Go ahead.
And all these other races.
Absolutely. But for me, I see it a little bit differently. You know, the media and the government and everyone keeps making this about color. They keep making it about race. But I don't believe it's about that. I believe that the racism and all that other triggers are tools. This is about power.
Yeah.
Okay? It's about two groups of people, people with power and people without. Even if everybody on this planet was white, okay, and I say white because white people are considered to be the privileged ones. So it's the one I'm going to use. Even if everyone on the planet was white or in the United States, they would find some way to categorize, separate, compartmentalize in order to create the fiction that would push for more power.
You really speak like Nietzsche. I love that. Friedrich Nietzsche. He speaks about the will to power. It's in human nature. And only and you cannot get rid of that. And that's why awareness is the only answer. Awareness on personal level is the answer to deal with it, that we are not, that we are aware of the fact that it, that human nature works that way.
Mm-hmm.
And how we can change it without thinking that we can abolish it. It is possible to change it, but it is part of human nature.
It is a part of human nature, and I believe that it's not something that we're going to, we can't get around this. We're going to have to get through it. And it's going to be in the prisons. That's where it's going to start. Because as people such as yourself and Sandy, and I'm sorry, I can't remember your name, the other woman's name.
Miriam
and you. When you go into the prisons and when you're dealing with the prisons, you are looking at, that's what's important. You're looking at a microcosm, because they break it down in the prisons the same way they do in society. You've got your black group, you've got your Asian group, you've got your Hispanic group, you've got all these groups. And everyone's allowed to say and do practically whatever as long as the guards allow it. And from what I'm understanding, the guards allow pretty much a lot as long as it's not hurting them. So you guys are important. You guys are the most important part of this because you're the ones who are seeing it. How are you going to bring that message out to let them know that what's happening in the prison is happening all around us? We just aren't paying attention.
I think they need to have
We are used to it, yes.
Oversight of the prison. Guards are afraid. Guards are afraid of, there's a lot of guards that know. I know this for a fact because I've been working with prisoners all over the country. Guards, there's a lot of guards out there that want to speak out, but they're afraid. They're afraid because of their union being so powerful. They're afraid of what's going to happen to them from their own peers. And that's
so
sad.
So what you see is the guards are afraid of the union and the prisoners are afraid of the guards. It's all based on fear.
That's right. That's right.
In prison officials.
Yeah, and that's a hierarchy of power.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see,
and
is,
all of it becomes.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I only want to say, you see it reflected in society.
Yeah. And we use weird reasons for it too.
But we do.
I mean, I'm not going to fault the guard or the policeman, but the guard and the policeman is saying, if I don't do it this way, I'm not only going to make my union mad, but retaliation is going to come from within the ranks I'm working, And if I make my union and the my peers angry as a guard, how am I going to feed my family? Where is my health insurance going to come from? It's like this big manipulation, and guess who gets most of it? The inmate. All of that trickles down to that prison.
Well, we're getting ready to close now. We have another 65 seconds, so I'd like to have you girls once again give your information and finish up with your feedback. And I thank you for being on with us.
You want to give me the information? About the, my email, etc.? MiriamJacob67@gmail.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I am on Facebook. I also have a Facebook page called Deeper Justice. I'm writing a book that's called, oh my goodness, I have so many thoughts in my mind now. And the title of my book will be Lost in the System. And I'm writing about the deeper patterns where the system is rooted in. And I hope that people who read it will become more aware of what's happening in the person as a reflection of what is happening in society, as a reflection of what has happened on a global way. It's all the same.
And everyone can find Maryam Jacobs, Dr. Maryam Jacobs on Facebook, on the internet. Just type her name in. And Mia, I thank you for being on with us again. Mm-hmm. It's been a pleasure. And
yeah,
this episode, and everyone, please join us next Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 o'clock p.m. 3 o'clock p.m. Maryam Jacobs time in the Netherlands.
That's
so
right.
Much for being
in the Netherlands.
In the Netherlands, yes.
Yes.
We live below sea level, so I'm a water woman. Oh, and Mia, it's nice. Don't forget to email me. We are going to schedule a Zoom meeting. I really like that. We have a lot
to discuss.
Absolutely.
I'm typing out an email even as we speak.
Yeah, I like that. That's good.
Thank you, girls, for being on, and really appreciate it. I love you both, and love you, audience. Step in next week and step out. Let's remember, divided we fall. This is what the system is trying to do, is to divide us all. United we stand. So let's think about that. And we wish you all a good week, a blessed week, and we look forward to next Wednesday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Thank you so much.
Well, welcome.
Take care, all.
Yeah, take care, all. Bye-bye.